Thank you, Fraser, for the invitation to present these awards today. And it's a particular pleasure for me to be here in the redesigned and revamped River Room restaurant of the Savoy Hotel. Some of you may not know, but this room is actually modelled on the spare dining room in Andrew Neil's flat. It's a scale model, just one third the size of the original. And as you can see, Andrew's exquisite paisley taste has been captured in every detail of this room. But can I also say it's a pleasure to be here because, for me, the Spectator has been a companion since my boyhood days. I remember coming across the first copy of The Spectator that I ever read when Alexander Chancellor was the editor in the 1970s and 1980s. And I had the feeling then that I was eavesdropping on a set of the most interesting conversations taking place anywhere in the world. And I've always had that sense ever since then. Thursday morning is one of the most exciting days in my calendar because it gives me an opportunity to prize open the pages of The Spectator and to rejoin those conversations. And The Spectator has championed the best writing, I think, in British journalism consistently for decades now. And of course, if we think of the names, James Forsyth, Charles Moore, Andrew Neil himself, Fraser, who populate its pages, then we all know that they're the voices to whom we pay the most attention when we're considering the fate of our country. But I think it's also important on this occasion that I should acknowledge the huge contribution made by the backroom boys and girls at The Spectator. And I wanted in particular to acknowledge the superb job that's done by Mary Wakefield as deputy editor, the wonderful work that's done by Freddie Gray, the great work that is done by Mark Amory, the literary editor. It's often those whose bylines don't appear in a magazine who are the heart and soul of the title. So can we all congratulate them on the work that they've done? There's another reason that I love The Spectator, and that's because it is the model for the type of Britain that I want to build. When people ask me, what is it that you hope to achieve as Education Secretary? I say, I want England, after I've left office, to be more like The Spectator. Does that mean that I want Boris Johnson in charge for 6 years? And half the women in senior positions to experience the huge surge in general well-being that he brought to their lives? You might think that I couldn't possibly comment. What I do mean is that I want Britain, England, to be, as The Spectator has been, a meritocracy. Fraser was educated at Nairn Academy, a comprehensive in Scotland. One of his distinguished predecessors, Frank Johnson, was educated at Shoreditch Secondary Modern. That recognition of talent and that willingness to promote people purely on ability has been a hallmark of The Spectator throughout the time that it's been run by the Barclay brothers, by Conrad Black, by a succession of generous proprietors. And there's a contrast with some other journalistic enterprises in this country. It's still the case that The Guardian, throughout its long and distinguished existence, has never had an editor who's been anything other than a public schoolboy. It's also the case that the BBC, throughout its long and distinguished period, has never had a director general who's been educated at a comprehensive. Now, you may call me a utopian. You may say that I'm a dreamer. But I'd like to think that perhaps in my lifetime, I might live to see a state school boy or girl editing The Guardian, or someone who's gone to a comprehensive in charge of the BBC. And I recognise that this romantic quasi-Marxist vision may not be realised, but nevertheless, no one's going to take it away from me. But we all know, of course, that there are many people, some in this room and some who are dear to us, don't we, Andrew, who would be brilliant Director Generals of the BBC. I can personally think of one figure, Andrew, a brilliant interrogator. Someone not overburdened by modesty, but nevertheless someone whose pen has allowed him to earn far more than his peers, and someone who also adds luster to London's swinging nightlife, who would be a brilliant Director General of the BBC. And I am, of course, referring to Tom Watson, the MP for West Bromwich West. Tom can't be with us today, and I know if he were here that he would profess that he would be all at sea at the BBC. He would find any environment where there was that degree of internecine politics and knife fighting totally alien to his character, and the requirement to exercise power in a way which led him inevitably into the media limelight would be too much for his retiring habits. But nevertheless, if Tom were the Director General of the BBC, he'd be a comprehensive schoolboy at the top, and so if we were to elect Ed Miliband as leader of the Labour Party, would we have another comprehensive schoolboy at the top? We all know that Ed has had to overcome huge disadvantages in order to reach the eminence that he has. We all know about the tough upbringing that he had in the streets of Primrose Hill. Many of the families there were on a cliff edge. They were just one trust fund away from having to work in the private sector. But nevertheless, Ed managed to claw his way up, overcome the youthful indignity of having to go to the same primary school as Boris Johnson, and he now dominates an environment which public schoolboys once thought their own, the shadow cabinet. And it's a pity that Ed can't be here as well, because I know that he would have enjoyed this evening. There are some other absentees who I suspect all of us would have wished to have been here, and not least because they deserve awards in their own right. Sally Berker, the Speaker's wife, sadly can't be here. I know that many of us would have wanted to see her win the Lembit Opic Memorial Shield for moral seriousness in public life. It's also the case that her husband, John Berko, can't be here. There are two awards that I know that he would have been in the running for. The Fox News Award for fair and balanced coverage at all times. And also the Kim Kardashian Memorial Thong for self-effacement in public office. And it's also a pity that His Honour Brian Leveson can't be here with us today, because I know that we'd all want to see him win the award which has been sponsored by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism for a commitment to truth-telling, not least for the famous phrase that he uttered in my presence, "I really don't need any lectures on freedom of speech, Mr. Gove, I really don't." But in the absence of all these distinguished names, we're fortunate to have 14 worthy winners today. And I'm looking forward to congratulating them, because even though I've lived with The Spectator since my teenage years and enjoyed the quality of journalism, the champagne for the mind that it provides, I'm also privileged, over the course of the last 7 years, to have been a Member of Parliament and to have seen the very best of those across parties fighting for ideas, fighting for causes, and displaying a passionate attachment to making this country a better place. And one of the great things about these awards is that it doesn't celebrate any narrow conception of public service. They celebrate all those characters who are, to my mind, essential to making Parliament, as it has been and as it will be, the most important institution in our public life, an institution of which it is a privilege to be a member, and an institution which The Spectator rightly celebrates in this convivial and enjoyable way every 12 months. And so I'd like to thank Andrew, The Spectator team, and all of you for contributing to these awards. It's a privilege to be able to award them today. Thank you.